Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers. I'm welcome to the show. With me, I have Jared Asher Harris. He's a wonderful, awesome director who let us review and also let us watch his film, Meat Cleavers. This is a comedy horror movie. Rossi and I both loved it. We were both geeking out, laughing over this movie. We can't wait to dive into this with Jared. So let's go on ahead. Let's welcome Jared to the show.
Welcome to the intro,
everyone.
Thank you. Everybody loves our intro. That's one of the things awesome. That we love.
What's our favorite? That was the coolest thing, getting that done.
How long have you had? Have you had that for a while now?
What, about 2 years now or a year?
Yeah. Maybe going on 2 years.
On 2 years now.
It looks sharp. It looks current. It looks awesome. Great work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Captured by the characters.
Thank you. The likeness and everything was just one of the things that we were mostly concerned with and everything when we were pitching it to the people that did us. We wanted to get the likeness down right and everything. We went through two other companies before they actually got our likenesses right. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
But Jared, here's the thing. We both really loved your movie from Meat Cleavers.
Yes.
And I thought it was funny. I thought it was authentic. I thought it was original. The thing that I really loved a lot was when we first get introduced to the character, she has a cleaver in her head. She's just as shocked as we are in the audience. Right. So her reaction is like how we would react if you had a cleaver in your fucking head.
Yeah.
So the thing that I was thinking was when she goes up to heaven, because we see the clouds.
Yeah.
So we know that, here's the thing, God is actually a woman. So in my perspective, I'm thinking to myself like this, okay? And you can correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm doing a little too deep on this. But my line of thinking was this. So for a woman to be up in heaven, I was wondering if she would actually see God in the way a woman would actually look at a woman, as to saying, in her eyes, a woman could be God. If a man dies, maybe he's looking into the lenses of a way a man would look.
Right.
Just saying, hey, God is a man. So everybody has a different experience with God according to how their sex is. So that's my line of thinking, of the way I was thinking it.
Right. You know, it goes to show, I guess, the power of the medium. I'll be totally honest. Didn't even think of that. See, even I don't know, and I don't know, it's there's no handbook on the, there's interview handbooks, but not on specifically with directing. I don't know if there is. In terms of how you're supposed to play with that stuff, because that's such a great idea. And so some part of me wants to be oh yeah, that's what I was going for. You know what I mean? Sadly it was not. But I think that interpretation, if that's how you view it, I think that's just as valid as any other one.
Thank you.
I like that's how you received it.
Thank you.
From minute one, were you thinking that, or like, or was it an afterthought? You were like, I wonder if, as you're experiencing the story, were you already thinking that?
Yeah, I was actually thinking that to myself. You know, to be honest with you, I thought that too.
Yeah, and that's like it. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ross.
No, I like the way that you looked at that, because that does make sense, because, you know, in the movie, they're describing, or God's describing to her, the woman's describing to the lady with the meat cleaver in her head, basically, when you die, you go through this post-mortem thing where you don't remember. So maybe for her not to freak out, that's how she viewed God as a woman. And I like how you look at it as, and if the guy dies, for him not to freak out, something more comfortable for him to view God as a man. But I have to say, the opening scene, how bright the clouds are in the background, just the brightness of that scene, and her just sitting there. I'm on the couch watching the film, and I'm laughing. It's funny.
It really
is. So my husband's sitting across from me. He's like, what are you laughing? I'm like, oh, there's this new film called Meat Cleaver. So he scoots over next to me. I start the film over, and we're watching it, and we're both giggling. It's a really good film. It starts off really good, very bright, and you stay because you want to know, just like John said, why does she have a meat cleaver in her head?
Yeah.
What happened? Right. So you're definitely glued because you want to find out what happened. How do we get to this place?
Says, even the version of God is like, you got a meat cleaver in your head. I have a meat cleaver? And I like how it messes up with her brain, though, too. I like how you had that aspect of, if I had a meat cleaver in my head, I wouldn't be thinking clearly. I would actually forget about what I remember 5 seconds ago. That reminds me of 5 Second Tom from 51st Dates, where basically, hi, I'm Tom. Because it won't matter anyways, because you won't remember.
So
I like that little authenticity where it's like, you know, you mess up with the brain cells, and then God is over there trying to pull the meat cleaver out.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I don't want you to touch me. I have a meat cleaver in the back in my fucking head. Look.
Right.
And it's like all about trusting and being faithful to God to get that meat cleaver out. So I like it on a biblical sense of that whole entire spectrum, which I thought I really appreciated. And I love the whole 80s look of it, though, too.
This retro
kind of style to it, especially the flooring of the black and white tiles.
Right.
And then how clean it looked. It looked
even the blue eyes, like the whole outfit, everything coming together so that you know that you're in a heavenly place, wherever you're at. But down to her eye color was so blue that went well with the room and the brightness of everything. Her clothing, the red hair, everything stood out. And even for the god, her nice grayish afro and just everything that comes along, and her calmness of telling the character, like when she's sitting there and she's like, your nose. And she's, oh my gosh, my nose bleeding. And then it's just, Go ahead,
Jared. You know, I'm really glad. First of all, I'm overwhelmed by my cup runneth over. You know, speaking of like phrases from biblical origins or whatever. I really thank you for all that. Regarding even the how God's being portrayed and whatnot. It's fascinating. You know, a lot of people will go through life, and I'm not a particularly one way or the other kind of person. I think maybe that's the entertainer and storyteller in me, where I like hearing all the, you know, I like hearing your perspective, you know, like but I felt that a lot of people go through life and they're like, you know, like some people you know, who are lost on their path, if you will be like that, why can't like God just explain this to me, or just tell me straight up, or just explain it to me? Like, because you can make the argument, wouldn't God just immediately say, okay, look, there's a meat cleaver in your head, but don't freak out because you're in heaven and you're totally okay.
Right.
But I thought that wouldn't be in God's character if I'm showing God, because we don't get that direct explanation in exact English, or at least I haven't experienced that. You know, in any way where like I'm hearing like a specific, okay, this is how you're going to handle it, this is what you're going to do. It kind of, you get gently guided to answers in life, whether that's God, whether that's the universe, whenever you want to ascribe it to. But that was the major thing there. But meanwhile, in hell, The devil.
That was awesome.
I want to talk about that too. Like
that was okay. Awesome.
But I want to capture one last thing about the heavenly aspect though too. I like how in a blink of an eye, you don't realize you're dead.
Yeah.
And then you wake up in heaven. It's like, no, I was alive. No, you were alive about 2 seconds ago before someone killed you.
Yeah.
Right. So I like that whole entire thing. And then the way you do hell though was perfect because it's like devil, the devil has his own hotline to where people talk to him, and he has like an office. It's like
he's all sleazy and
right. I like how he's like in his in like this white beater outfit.
Yeah.
He's like, look, I'm gonna torture your ass to death because you're in hell, but I'm gonna you know what though? I'm gonna let you figure this shit out on your own.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like Kevin, where she's actually explaining it to you. No, he's like, before I do this, because we're gonna spend eternity here. I'm going to go ahead and let you try to experience this for your own self.
In some ways, it's being generous, giving the murderer a chance.
Right.
But I think Satan, I was going to analyze the characters. Satan probably knows, though, that he's going to mess it up.
Yes.
He probably knows that. And he's just
a human. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like I'll let him, a squirm, though. I want to see that happen. You know what I mean?
And another thing that I thought that was funny, though, too, was, like, it has, like, a little bit of callback of Friday the 13th where Jason Voorhees has the bag over his head for the killer. So I like that whole entire throwback of that. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I like that whole entire mysterious thing element of we don't know who this character is or anything. Right. There's a bag over his head, but we know somehow or another he's connected with the girl who has a cleaver stuck to her head. Right. And then he goes, well, where am I? What do you think you're in? Don't you see the horns? Don't you see what's going on? Because you're a bad person. You're a shitty person.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're in hell.
Yeah.
As well.
No, even the part where where she's in heaven still, and we get to the end. When it's the end, and God's like, look, see, the end. I thought that was funny to then shift to hell and get that aspect. And then I'm laughing because it's like, oh, that's so brilliant. Now we get to see the killer in hell. And what he's got here is because he got hit by the truck, how he got there, all of that. And not only that, the screams in the background. You hear the screams of the people being tortured in the background in hell. Yeah. So I love how you brought that together and the conversation of him basically saying, I need to know how hard I can go on you down here. So, if you can, God calls and, she wanted to talk to the killer. And the fact that he gets on the phone, doesn't even say, I'm sorry, just, hey, can you forgive me? Go ahead.
Growing up into this day, I've always had more female friends than male friends, just my whole life, even like when I was in high school, whatever. And I'd oftentimes be the friend listening to girls describing to me the boyfriend thing and the breakup and how he handled it and he couldn't even say sorry. So in some ways, just a fun fact, that phone call is kind of like the whole I can't do much about that right now, but we should be moving forward,
And right.
It's like, dude, even Devil's even Devil has more tact than
right.
Since you were effed up for me as well.
You can't say sorry. What's wrong with you? But at the same time, but it's interesting though, because Satan wants the murderer to apologize to Wendy. However, Satan couldn't care less about the murderer apologizing to him.
Right.
There's a line in there, where the murderer goes, when he realizes where he goes, oh, I'm sorry. And then Satan's like, I don't need you to be sorry. It's just like, come on. You know what I mean? I think that actually comes from a very personal place. Because in life, I just always, for some reason, apologies, I appreciate the gesture and everything. But for some reason, that only does so much.
Right. I tell my kids, I was like, are you sorry because you got caught? Are you sorry?
Yeah.
Are you genuinely sorry? Because there's two different things. And you need a breakdown on what you're apologizing for. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah. Right. So Satan says that. And then, even though probably knowing the murderer will mess it up, gives him a chance, though, to instead of saying sorry, actions speak louder than words, and then he messes it up. And now, you know what I mean? There's that one last chance, even though it's technically too late in some ways. It's like, maybe there's a chance.
Right.
Yeah, no. But yes,
I just love how he's like, and who is this? And she's like, me, Cleaver? Oh, I
yeah,
love
yeah,
that.
yeah, yeah.
It's meat cleaver.
Oh,
great
it's you.
Film. Yeah, right.
Like you're some kind of art director or something. Oh, it's you.
Right.
You're my favorite piece.
Yeah,
right.
Or like a client or something.
Right.
Like, oh,
right.
Of course. Like
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember you like for 5 seconds ago. We both
right.
loved each other.
Right.
It's funny because I think partially part of that is to show somebody how confused the murderer is too. Like, he has a little bit of amnesia.
Yeah,
I see.
Right.
The reason he has that thing, I don't know how obvious it was. So that thing he has on his face, it's supposed to be a fresh injury because he got hit by the truck. I don't know if that came across. That's supposed to be a new injury, like because he got killed by the semi truck hitting him.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah. So he's supposed to be a little confused. But anyway, yeah.
I love his story, though. His story of saying, like, well, you had a bad childhood, and, you know, I just, you know, like he's saying, giving him a little background on the murder. You know, and then have him take the bag off his head, and you see how messed up his face is and whatnot. But I wanted to mention that as well. How he's defending himself.
Yeah, it's funny watching it with an audience, though. How new jokes form. So you know that jokes that I didn't even intend. Like I want to take credit for I do for like the lines that are written and like you know obviously stuff with timing and like the head turn, the thumbs up, stuff like that. Of course. But there are little things that I don't know how often filmmakers own up to this. There's a lot of stuff that when you watch with an audience, it's like, oh, I didn't realize that was a joke. For example, he takes off the mask and he has an obvious face injury, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then if it wasn't interpreted that that was new, it's interpreted like that he's always had that injury. Maybe he's deformed. Maybe he had an accident as a child, you know. Saying like, what happened to you? And like we're looking at him, he has a face injury, and then he goes, "What? We circumcised as an adult? Was that?"
That's right. That's right.
Like you know, what I mean? Like you know, what I mean?
It's right.
But that thing is, I didn't write it that way. Watching it with audiences, they laughed, and it was, and they said like, "Oh, it's funny because like it's obvious." And like, "Oh, that wasn't even intended." But just that's the magic of, just
right.
like you, Don, with your interpretation of unique. Like everyone has their, right. or both you with your own personal. God, you know, of a or vision of it that comforts you, you know, the same way how you interpret that, I think that elevates the product. I think the same thing with the comedy of it. It just so this is really in a lot of ways is a first hand experience for me, if I'm being fully honest, because I've never actually other than like little like high school things, little things here and there, this is actually my first short film ever. And as an adult, you know, I made little animation films, there were little student film festivals and what have you.
Right.
But this is all new for me. Not directing, but directing, you know,
right, a full blown
SNL, let alone with all original, you know, characters, with a unique set of rules and universe, you know, obvious inspirations from the classic depictions of SNL. But anyway, that's been the really magical thing, seeing how people respond to things.
Right.
And like from FilmQuest. The film was selected, and so it's part of FilmQuest, so that's a pretty big deal for it to be your first short film and for it to be one of the selections at that film fest. So congratulations on that. That's awesome.
Thank you. Like, to me, it's like a dream to be in a genre festival like that. It was even more shocking, though, than that, though, even though, like, well, maybe equally shocking. So it played at the LA International like Shorts Fest.
Yes.
And that was obviously like, you know, all that I love, like already like, wow, like an honor. But the other thing is, even with the festival's been so far, it's always in the horror block, right?
Right.
And, like, interesting because like it is hard to kind of place it because if you're putting in a comedy block and then you have people who maybe are sensitive to like, you know, weird imagery or like, you know, some profanity in the comedy, but like, you know, just the context of it all, that thing, the plot, the whatever. So you can't put it in comedy. You couldn't just put it in like, you know, like, it's not a drama. So it's like, where do you, it's like, is it going to work? But then after it won best horror film.
That's
all. I guess it's a horror film.
I mean, you think about it though, it's like dark humor. And everybody's the hard thing about comedy is it's the most objective, most hardest genre they can go with because everybody's humor is different and hits differently.
And I was really scared.
Go on ahead.
I was scared because, you know, through the years, you know, I friends and people in my life or that, you know, told occasionally that I'm funny or whatever, and that you should try stand up. I'm like, oh no, like whatever. And I never fancied myself a writer either, like ever. Like, even like in the short film, I'm like, okay, I'm writing because I have to. And I thought I had a very, like, in some ways, like a sense of humor that I thought was a little weird or whatever, you know? Like, I mean, all humor is weird, but like I thought was maybe a little too off the beaten path. But I was so pleasantly relieved and happy that like people find it funny. Like, you know what I mean? Like those dry, just hold, those like where you're just like, it's like almost like awkward. And also the comedy of even just like how realistic a line is, like it's so natural, which is funny in of itself. Like someone who's red with horns speaking like someone you meet at trade.
Right. Right.
Anyway. Oh, so, but a little ADHD. Well, I am.
I did too.
The Film Quest thing, though, just going back to that, that's why I'm so grateful there's something like a Film Quest. Because it's hard to, with a film like mine, where do you place it? And is like the all of the above festival. So that I was really happy about.
And this is another thing I wanted to talk to you about was too. I like how the film ends on that whole thing of you're not sure what the punishment is for, you know, for the actual villain, the killer. Yeah. So I like the fact that you can have this watercolor conversation where you can actually say, well, what do you think the punishment is? Oh, I think he got pineapples shoved up his ass or something.
Yeah. Or eternity or something. Yeah, exactly.
You know, well, so and I was like, no, like I don't think so. Right.
Can we speak like that on this spot? Are we allowed, or should we, how clean do I keep this?
You can clean it. You can do as much as you want. Oh, I mean.
Okay, cool. Again, then also, you know, it's also, I should present myself in a professional manner, no matter what, but you know, I'm just curious. But yeah, I wonder too. I couldn't even, it's probably, but they always say, right, I think they've shown it in movies before. I can't even name which one, but like it's almost like you can't even. I think you know what it is. In It, at least mm-hmm. in the remake, can't this in the original, where like he opens up the mouth and gives him a sample. Of what's coming? And it's like you're it's so horrible you can't even fathom it.
Yeah,
it's like overload. Like I imagine it's one of those. I feel like that's. Which makes it all the funnier that Satan's kind of like, you know, like casually whatever, and opens the door and it's like a pit of like fire, like just like they're having like water, yeah, like bar cooler small talk, you know.
You know what I can imagine though, like he opens the door and there's nothing there. They're just on a cliff. The office just sitting on the
ground. That would be enough. And that's great.
Then that's great. He's like, "Come with me. I want to show you something." Then all of a sudden, he goes after you. He goes out and he falls onto the down for his punishment.
Yeah, this is what it should be. He falls down to his great thinking. This is now it's a writing session. he opens the door, falls from off the cliff, lands, and dies, and then appears in the room. And he's like, "Where am I?" And he's forced to go through the same and die again.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're done here. Go through the door. Off the cliff again. Like, it never ends.
And that's a good punishment. That's the best punishment, other than torture. That's torture itself every day, doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, right.
Over and over and over. So that's a good
one. Same phone call.
And that confuse that whatever. Yeah. And then I guess for eternity, Wendy gets to have her one up.
Yes.
Time too. So everyone wins for eternity.
Yes.
Right.
And then the end. And I love that. Yeah. Satan's like, see, it's the end. See, look, it's the end. I love that. I just love that. Where did the idea come from, though?
For the end?
For the short film, Meat Cleaver.
Oh. That's a good question. where actually, specifically, like, I think about the characters without came from stuff, but in terms of the ethos of it, I had I really relate to Wendy a lot. growing up, and also, like, you know, you talk to any psychoanalyst, someone who writes a film, even if it's like little percentages, every character is a little bit of you. It has to be, because you're the one writing. Even if it's like, you know, something that you've observed about someone else, it's still a part of you. So, but I'd say 99% of it in some ways I'd say 75% is Wendy, then 25% is the devil, because that's just stuff I always want to say to people, like, get it together. I felt like Wendy a lot growing up, like, and in hindsight, not at the time, because I was just a kid, you don't know if you're a kid. Looking back, I had a meat cleaver in my head and no one was doing anything. I'm kind of here freaking out. And everyone's very nonchalant and saying, but it's going to be okay. And it's like, you know, and so I think that anxiety, that fear, that feeling lost and confused and trying to figure out what's happening. I think that, and I also, you know, and I grew up in a very, with that life experience, at the same time, I was grew up in a place that was, you know, very, you know, suburban, you know, the people there were very like, you know, seemed, you know, there's always stuff behind closed doors, but very, you know, happy and, you know, normal and everything was like perfect and clean, you know? And so kind of, I love the juxtaposition of like pretty dress, beautiful eyes, red hair, you know, this beautiful room with the marble floor and whatever and whatever. And there's a meat cleaver in the head.
Right.
And I think, and I also, so after I was brainstorming that, then the line, you've got a meat cleaver in your head. Like, I don't know. It was, I don't know how to tell you this, but I thought that was just a good line. And I just wrote, yeah. And I just wrote the rest around that line.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it. But also too, I know this is your first interview and everything. I was just thinking that you would think that other people would actually interview you though, too, because of how clever this is, authentic it is, you know, and stuff like that. But it's just crazy to think that, you know, you did a Hoser, you know, music video, and I love the music video. The choreography was fantastic for that too. The originality behind it as well.
Well, I have to say though, with regards in respect to the choreography, that it was a collaboration. Jillian Myers is a legendary choreographer, you know, I would tell her things like, "Oh, it should feel like ballet," or like, you know, let it follow the lyrics, or you know, I want this part where the camera's overhead. And it feels almost like those old style, I forgot the word for it, but when you see like those old films where you have the women in the pool with the little caps on and they're
So
I give her references like that. And then she came back with that. I can't dance to save my life. So I want to make that abundantly clear. Like, yes, well, yes, it was a collaboration though. But thank you for saying
it. You're welcome. You're very welcome. Because here's the thing. I was paying attention to all the details in it and I couldn't help but here's the thing, but the choreography was just fantastic. And then you also have this other thing with the operating and everything too, because of the cancer.
Yeah.
Right. And I really like the concept of what you pitched to them to do this and them saying yes to you, because I see something in you that you probably didn't. Now, my question is this. Do you think that they seen something in you that you didn't see yourself because of the fact that they're like, you know what? I like this concept. But to you, it may seem like it's a little too dark, a little too twisted up and say yes.
Well, just like I said about meat cleaver, how a part of me, you know, I'm sure as I get older or, you know, we all grow and stuff, I'll maybe grow out of this stuff. But I always have this, it's natural, this slight fear, especially with doing the kind of stuff I do. Like, it's too much. Not too like, oh, it's too grotesque or it's too offensive, but more like it's just too out there.
My line of thinking.
My priority is I want to entertain. I don't want to make stuff like, and there's no, everyone has different tastes and different styles with like those, like, you know, kind of like off the grid, kind of smaller or alternative types of films. I'm into the, like the spectacle. So I have a bit of this conundrum where I want to be as entertaining and widespread as possible, but my natural taste and what I think I do best is very out there. So I think the hope, you know, with an artist like Hosier, who's now, especially with his, single to Sweet, which just dropped I think in the last year or whatever, he's like one of the currently biggest artists in the world. So I think there was something very cool about one of the, you know, my biggest video and artists I've, you know, worked with, went with the idea that was the most authentically me. Something about that was like, oh wow, like if anything's gonna give you the thumbs up, like you're doing something right, I guess it would be that. Because he wasn't desperate for like, oh, who's available? Like, you know, so that was very validating. And yeah, he saw something in me. And I mean, of course, you know, to be pursuing this, I have to see something in myself, right? Like I have to wake up every morning and try this, but I think he saw even more, or I might say he, but also his team or whoever, the powers that be. Yes, I do think they saw even more than I saw.
Right. And the thing that I've had to say that I appreciate with you is the fact that, you know, the humor in this film and stuff like that is perfect. Sometimes I'll watch a movie that has dark humor in it and it just doesn't, it feels forced. Your stuff feels more casual.
Yeah.
And more in the way that you and I would talk and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it is the fact that it's, I want to say is, you know, it's rewatchable. Not only is it rewatchable, but it's relatable. Mm-hmm. And you can always discover something different when watching it as well.
You guys are so kind.
I think even for like my husband who's doesn't like everything, but to sit there with him and for him to start laughing at the same parts where I'm laughing at, he looks at me and he's like, wow, this is a really good film. I'm like, yeah, it's really funny. So like I said, we watched it again last night and rewatched it and still the same laughter, the same everything. But like John says, it's just, it's so normal. It's just, it's so like a conversation.
It's
you
also
know?
Everyday normal life though too, is like, how do we picture ourselves when we...
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
It's like questions that we would ask our own self and having that conversation with other people. Like, what happens when you die? What do you see when you die?
Right.
Is there an afterlife after we die?
Right. Yeah.
And how we would actually view things.
Yeah.
And you saying that kind of like, I guess, jogs my, you know, certain things like, you know, you ask the question, but like, you know, because so intrinsically part of my identity, I don't think to bring it up. So regarding that whole thing, what happens when you die? I should add, since I was very, very little, like I would say I kindergarten is like six years old, five years old, whatever. I was hyper aware of death. And like very like, like, and not in a like, oh, and then life is over and then there's a great beyond. For some reason, I went straight to eternal blackness. And I remember clearly remember the phrase in my head, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And I could spiral. And as a kid looking back, I was having like little mini panic attacks. Well, not many, they were panic attacks. Some of the, you know, the adults in my life, and not in a bad way or whatever, you know, I wasn't from a particularly or really, you know, religious background. So, nor was I around like, you know, militant atheists, but either way, it was kind of like, but that's part of life. You know what I mean? As opposed to be like, no, like you get to go to, you know, heaven and like, you know, there's just, so I, from a young age have been very, well, I was like, very like, this is showtime. I gotta make this work. Like, you know what I mean? So, but also there's a lot of pressure that comes with that too. So anyway, regarding the probably, if I was going to make a first film, I suppose it would be something that would be building off of a thought I've had for many, many, many years. Like, what work? And I think this is, you know, this throws an answer into the pool of what could be, you know?
Right. And I know Rossi wants to ask you something in a minute, but I want to go on ahead and say one more thing before I give it over to her. But because it's in my mind, if I don't, I have ADHD too. So if it's not in my, if I don't say it right, if I don't say it now, I'm not going to say it ever. Because I'm going to forget in like 5 seconds because I have a meeting.
I'm the same way. That's why, like, as I'm answering, I'm thinking, am I even answering the question anymore? Like, I don't want, I literally have a document open that says, slow down. Don't overthink. You come off great. They will ask you to clarify. You don't check to make sure they understand you.
Right.
Literally.
I love that.
What were you going to say? My bad. See, now I just basically what you should do. I just do it. It's some profile. Go ahead. Please. I'm going to take some meds. Hold on. No. Wait. Go ahead.
It's okay. It's okay. You're good.
Let me hold my bad. That was a loud one.
You're good. But, you know, the thing that I have to say, too, about this is the fact that, you know, I think what you're doing is smart. You're starting off with doing music videos. Yeah. And then after you do music videos, you're starting out doing your own indie projects. I see directors where, like, where they do a tons of music videos and they do a big, huge movie production. Right. Yeah. And then it's basically cookie cutter. The editing is choppy. They don't learn from their mistakes because they're thinking that they're shooting a music video instead of a full line production. Right. And it shows in their movie production.
Right.
You, on the other hand, you already have a straight line of what you want to do. Your stuff, the way your stuff is edited and the way you're doing your storytelling is fantastic. The editing is down to a T. Music is not too loud to where I can't hear the person talk.
It doesn't echo at all.
Because I've seen this in several other movies. I mean, I've seen it where certain directors, here's the thing. I think the Suicide Squad was also one of those movies where it was cookie cutter. Yes, you can blame the studio. Yes, you can blame all that. But at the end of the day, you're also the director who makes those choices in the editing process.
Right.
How things are edited. And it's not a cohesive story. With yours, it's cohesive. You can hear everything. You can see everything. It is a clean cut movie that is fantastic. That has formularly a lot of layers to it. It'll make you laugh. And like Rossi said, you can actually watch this movie more than once and laugh at the same jokes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very well.
Because the fact of the matter is, I've seen it probably like a million times now. So what it feels like to me is the equivalent of just looking at a white piece of paper, like blank, and just being like, that's how I feel about it now, because I can mime it in real time. So it's so nice to be reminded, oh no, it is funny. Right. You know, once you see a comedy that many times, it stops kind of being, especially if you wrote it, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's so nice to be reminded, oh yeah, it is funny, you know? There was something else I was going to say. You said the clarity and the sight, the sound, the story, it's all very crisp. I think that actually goes back to another like thing that's been a thing throughout my life. When I was young, I had a very big thing about, I felt like I, you know, wasn't understood. It's very important. I want people to understand, not just me. Well, hopefully everyone understands each other. I want to understand, you know, what I'm saying, but also my work. I want people to be like, wait, what was that? That was confusing. Or wait, that shot was too quick or whatever. Like, even when I'm doing a quick shot, I get my music videos, I will do it enough where I'm keeping in mind, I want them to know what just happened. I hate the idea of someone being like, oh, wait, what? Rewind that. Or, this was doing really well, but that one shot was really bad. Or that was confusing. I wanted everything to be clear. So yes, the audio, I don't want any excessive whatever. There were more jokes and more lines in this, like, you know, things that were filmed that I cut out because, like, you know what? It obscures too much. It's not, you know what I mean? Which I guess is an editing choice, like you're saying. Sometimes it's not even what you put in, it's what you take out, as you know.
Right.
That's a very valid thing to say. And I think, I'm very conscientious about clarity, I guess, I suppose.
What do you like most about what you're doing?
all of it. Like, I think being able to connect and talk to and work with and feel like, you know, what's the word? Embodied, and I don't know if the right word is, with people more than I do in any other part of my life. Like, never before have I felt more of a sense of, like, you know, just like human, like, experience. Like, I don't feel any more alive than when I'm doing that. Somehow when I step onto set, everything like that is like not ideal about like life or me or whatever, like, you know, we all have our things, feels like it melts away. You know, I really, that's why, like, you know, it's always been such an obvious in some ways thing to me that this is what I should pursue, because I don't know this feeling anywhere else. Like, you know, so I think that's why I like, I feel, I guess, alive. I know it's a bit more heady than like, oh, this particular thing, but that's kind of, I guess that's how I would answer.
Nice. What do you got next? Yeah, what's, are you working on anything right now? Will we get another horror film?
Yeah, I'm running something else. I have, I'm working on of course, visual music videos and stuff, like right now, like ongoingly. But yeah, I'm already writing a new thing. And I can't say like anything, perhaps partially one of the reasons, you know, not too many people, you know, you said like, oh, how I have people ask you about talking to you or whatever, is that Meat Cleaver isn't available anywhere. You know, it's been like a handful of, you know, festivals, whatever. a few, but I mean a couple, but like the point is it's not that viewable. It's going to be soon available somewhere. And I just got that news 2 days ago.
It's awesome.
I can't say any details, but like, yeah, I'm excited about that. So that I guess even though it's not a project, I'm working on that right now. I think something about being so embraced also by the other people who have, like, you know, seen my work or followed me or the Instagram page for Meat Cleaver, which is blows my mind that somebody, you know, for a short film would come out and, like, you know, support, like, that also told me, like, was there doubting? Very embraced by, like, horror people. And I was never, because I was such an anxious kid or, like, very easily, like, scared, frightened, whatever, I was a big horror person growing up. I always loved Tim Burton. Always.
I do, too. But that was my go-to.
My AIM, AOL, like, whatever, messenger username was Tim Burton Jr. You know?
I love it.
That could do any insight. And I had a Tim Burton themed bar mitzvah. So,
dude, like, now that you've mentioned it, like, the tiles and everything is very Tim Burton-esque.
Yeah.
And them too.
And also the very, you know, like, the big, hairy, but, like, I'm sure all of this is, like, there's so much, like, subconsciously in there, I'm sure.
Yes.
But, yeah, but after such embrace and appreciation from, like, horror people and also talking with horror people and realizing my favorite parts about this was even working with, for example, Jim Ojala, who's like a practical, like, effects person. So, like, the Meat Cleaver in the head stuff, you know, he's building, like, you know, actual alien puppets. Like, he's that guy. He's a villain. Okay. That was one of my favorite parts of the whole process. So I, all of a sudden, I'm like, you know something? I think horror is... I'm finding myself very comfortable in that. So actually, I connected with a cinematographer who's primarily interested in horror. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to explore some more. I'm going to make more horror. So that's what I'm writing right now.
I guess you're lining up for something for Blumhouse, to be honest with you. I could see you doing something for, like, right? Blumhouse.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, hey, definitely.
Give them my number if you talk to them.
I sure will. I'll tweet them out and say, hey, look, you need a Harry Jarrett.
Hey, go ahead.
You know what, though? I want to flip the script for a second here. Okay. So I know your favorite director is Tim Burton, but here's what I want to do. What is something that an actor brought out of you that you never thought you had before? Because I know that you said that Hoser probably saw something in you, but I want to flip the script a little bit, do a little extra. Be like, what did an actor bring out of you that you never thought you had before?
Oh, that's such a good question. Bring something. I mean, what way? Could you give me an example?
Creativity or bringing out a certain character that you never saw before,
right?
In them and stuff like that. And what did they bring out to you? And everything that is like, you know what? Maybe I should change a little bit of my directing style here or there and stuff like that. Let's bring some salt into something.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah. I think actually. I think all of them, everyone actually in the cast, this was my first, you know, real experience. While working with them, I learned that yes, you think, and, you know, and obviously the script is the script. It aligns with the lines and the characters and their overall whatever is what it is. But in terms of even how lines are delivered and, like, the joke, even, like, there's, like, you know, you can say a line two different ways and they'll both be funny, but there's a different type of funny. So I think realizing, like, wow, like, there are things in here that you know, I think writers and directors are honest. Like, there is so much in there that you don't even realize is in there. Yes, so much is intentional, but so much isn't. And an actor will interpret a line and read it in a way that you didn't imagine. For example, Wendy says, you know, it's me, and the murderer remembers, and he's like, oh, it's you? And that thing. And she's like, yeah, it's me. I originally had to be like, this is incredible. Oh my, this is, and then he realized, right? what was happening. And then he like would freeze. The actor took that and was like, you know, I don't think he would be like that. If he's actually consistent with the character and who he is, and he's kind of, he's out of it and whatever, he wouldn't be someone who would appreciate such a massive, is the word ethereal, spiritual, magical moment like that. Like that would, so I think he should just be like, this is surprising. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, and I'm like, that's that. I would have never thought to do it that way.
I think it's good though, because it'd be like as if the audience is watching it and they're just as surprised as he is, right, as well.
Yeah.
So it's stuff a natural like response.
And also, the other thing I'll say is the way I originally wrote it was that, or planned for it, is like Heaven was going to be very like, you know, a short or film. Filmic, filmy, cinematic in the way the characters spoke and stuff like that, very whatever. But then Hell was going to be very like hyper realism. So the devil originally was written to be very much like to talk normal and be like, dude, I'm red. Like, but not with an accent, right? Whatever. These are horns. What do you think? Like, almost like he's on
I love the fact that it's like that, though. But, yeah, it's not over the top like that.
But the thing is, though, that was originally the, but then Rob Moore came in, you know. And I also show special credit. The murderer was played by David Fine. He's a fantastic actor. And in terms of like the thing that people don't get, like you said, perfect going out for you, John. The subtlety aspect and not doing too much. David was perfect.
He was.
Yeah. And as you're then Rob Moore, who played Satan, that was nuts.
Yes.
Yeah, he was great.
Cartoony. It could be
cartoony
in a way. It's like, and the devil.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, that's what I like about it. It's like, how we would talk to Satan himself or God himself.
He had a conversation a million times before and he's just tired of it. He's like, when are people going to get it? You know, like they teach them in school, the guy with the pitchfork and the, why don't they, isn't there the connection? Why is there, should be no confusion right now. You hear people screaming outside. It's a million degrees in this room. What went wrong? Whatever went wrong is clearly the reason why you're here.
Right. And it's insulting to Satan himself.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's like, you don't know me? Like, you know what I mean? Like, So.
Go ahead, Ross.
Oh, film. Speaking of films or music, being that you direct a lot of music videos, music was a big part of your life?
Since I've always made, it's a joke. I want to insult anyone, but I've always tell people, and maybe it's the ADHD in me, because, you know, film is a very long thing or whatever. I've always been a bigger music fan, actually, than a film fan. I wouldn't say I'm there's like a cinephiles or whatever. Not obviously, look what I do. I love film. But music has always been, I think, in large part because, like, you know, even growing up, I can just vividly remember being on, like, the bus and, like, at, like, middle school, like, bus to school, wanting to die, hating my life, and just having my, I had a little iPod, and listening to music and just like imagining this whole like sequence. And I remember vividly like this one day where I was imagining all the cars all of a sudden off the road would start like lifting up and whatever. And the trees would come out of the ground, the roots you'd see. Like, I would have these little, and I would get to escape. You know what I mean? And then I'd arrive at school and the iPod, the headphones would come off and then I'm back and, you know.
Right.
So music has always been, and you know, as a young kid, you know, my dad driving around his car and introduced me to stuff like Queen and like Sweet, Ballroom Blitz, all that stuff. They weren't as big in the States as they were in the UK. But anyway, and just that really, great question. Music has always been a major thing. In fact, talking about like what's next, I'm not totally diving in yet because I need to make sure everything's, I don't, just like with me, Cleaver, everyone, people for years, even in college, I went to school that teaches film. I didn't take any production or directing classes or anything because I thought I was going to be an editor, so I just took mainly editing courses. And so I didn't take any writing courses either. I made some projects that were like, green screen stuff and like, experimental stuff, but never like a proper like narrative. Where was I going?
Like a proper narrative of what you were going to do.
What was your original question?
Music, how?
Yeah, I guess it's always been like yeah, just like a driving force. Because like I guess I wasn't a writer naturally. Like, so like music was kind of helping me fill that void in, you know. And then, oh, I remember what I was saying. This is going to be good, I promise. People were saying for so long, like, because I didn't make a short film in, like, you know, college. I didn't make a short, you know, really directed anything, whatever, right? People were saying, well, you got to make a short film. I'm like, no, I'm waiting. It needs to be right. It needs to be right, right? Like, I need to be, and then I made me Cleveland, and I guess I was right. So just in that same vein, speaking of with how much I love music, I want to do a musical. The dream is to do movie musicals.
I want to do horror movie musicals. You should get with Ice Nine Kills because of the fact that they do horror movies according to how American Psycho, for instance, they use elements of a musical through American Psycho. With that, that's why I love Ice Nine Kills so much. I think that would actually blend in perfectly. Matter of fact, I remember watching my very first Ice Nine Kills music video. I'm like, I never knew I needed an American Psycho musical as much as I knew I needed now.
Yes. And I think there's something about, again, music is so beautiful. Even like the stuff that's like, you know, like aggressive or heavy metal, whatever. There's such a beauty, a natural beauty to so something about the, I hate to overuse this word because it's so overused, but, you know, the juxtaposition of music and singing with like the same way how the contrast of a sweet girl like Wendy with a meat cleaver head. I just love I think in general, I love contrast. Like both visually with like lighting, you'll notice in my stuff. On a narrative level, on whatever level, like even I did this video with an artist, Madeline, called Dead, which is what really also made me realize how beautiful like blue and the red hair looks. Like, you know, it's like I love that. And it's a video where she's like talking about, you know, the song's very chipper and whatever, but it's about one day I'm gonna be dead, you know. And the video is like a cat and mouse chase of her like walking through the woods, and this killer is right behind her trying to kill it, and she accidentally moves out of her way with the Oreo whenever. I love that contrast. He's got a gas mask on and a giant wrench.
It's like Age of an Innocence of someone, and then all of a sudden something dark and tragic happens to them.
And I think you hit on the head, and I think I relate to that because I was very like that as a kid. I was very like, you know, the best of others, and then shit happened, you know.
But you know what though, you and I are both pretty much the same in a way, because I can relate to you, because I remember being on the bus listening to a soundtrack like Men in Black, and then there's a Danny Elfman score. I'm a huge Danny Elfman. And here's the thing, I would actually do this. Like, I'm conducting an orchestra in my seat. And I would actually be doing that. And then, music has always been a huge part of my life, though, too. And scoring with Danny Elfman was actually my childhood. Beetlejuice. Then you also have Batman. You have all that with Danny Elfman. He was my top tier score.
Yeah. Like, all those. Yeah. And that collaboration, that bond is legendary.
Music has always been something too, because I would always watch Behind the Music on VH1.
I would
study music first, and then I would try to incorporate it into movies as well.
Right.
Just like you, because I also wrote short stories. I've done that stuff and things like that. And like I said, I can relate to how you do things, because I was actually like that too at that age as well, where I'm sitting in my seat. I'm also doing the musical numbers, like, and imagining different things. So yeah, man, I have to say, I love what you're doing. Hands down,
I really appreciate it. Like, really, you two are. You're great. You're great interviews. But B, you're very. I really appreciate everything you said, and the fact even your husband loving like the
him
being a heartbreak. You know what I mean? Like that.
He's really.
Like you two are here interviewing me, so you must somewhat enjoy the product. But hearing that someone has no affiliation, never even know me, whatever. Hey, who knows me? We'll hang out. But like, it's like, this is good. Like, that's so nice.
You're very welcome.
You guys have been wonderful.
You're welcome anytime.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, we would love to have you back again, because seriously, this has been a fun conversation.
Yeah?
With you.
I did good?
Yes.
Good. You're like me. The first time I came on, John introduced me to podcasts, and it's so funny because he was telling me about that. Like, you're a little nervous. He's like, Rossi, it's exactly how you were when you first came on the show. I was really nervous. I never did it before. What do I do? Do I just sit here? It was just, you know, so he's like, yeah, he's going through that, what you went through. And then obviously when you get on, that's why we have you guys come a little bit earlier so you can kind of chill with us, talk to us, kind of get comfortable so that you know what's going on. But you did great. You did really good.
Yeah, you did. And awesome. Also, too, I still remember whenever I first interviewed Rossi, for example.
Yes, that's right.
Like, she didn't know who I was. She didn't know. She's like, is it going to be one of those ones like Robert and Ebert where it was like, I'm you know, the way that the wind moved.
Yeah, just steadily.
No, no. I'm like, and once, and we just built a connection together and built this friendship up to the point where I'm like, you know what? It just makes sense for us to do a podcast together after 4 years.
And you two really play well off each other. Like, and you guys are hyper aware of when the other one wants to speak. It's actually really interesting to see.
Thank you.
But it's like really interesting, actually. Thank you. You'll be like, John, you were going to say something? I'm like, he was?
She knows my body movements. It's like how I know she leans in a little bit. I'm like, she has something to say.
Anyway, beautiful what you have.
Thank you. Thank you so much. But
we'd love to have you back to discuss the new project. Anything that you have going on, just hit us up and, you know, hey, John, we'll make a studio up and share and come back. Please be a friend of the channel. That's what we call it.
Yes.
Jared's now a friend of the channel, guys.
I love that. And I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And by the way, please stay back and everything after we end the show too, because after the show and everything, we'd like to talk to our guests and properly exit them out and everything. And
of course, I'll be right here.
So, Rossi, do you have anything coming up as far as your shows go for Rossi Talks?
Rossi's Clubhouse. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, cartoonist and creator David Reed will be here. David B. Reed. Let me make sure he will be here Wednesday. We're going to have an earlier show on Wednesday, guys. It's going to be at 12 o'clock noon. So he's going to join me, and we're going to talk about Wonder House Entertainment, everything he has going on, whether it's new cartoons and other projects. And later on in the month, we have Joey Cowell that will be coming in. And also, there's another actor. He's a surprise that will be coming in on the 23rd. So a lot of exciting things going on at Rossi's Clubhouse, guys.
And so as far as my show goes, I'm going to have It Is What It Is podcast back. Vernon and I are going to be dissecting scene by scene Baby Boy, going scene by scene of that movie because it's my first time seeing it.
Right.
We're going to do a nostalgic review of basically a 10 out of 10 or whatever, how we felt nostalgically, and then go into it, dissecting it, how we see it in modern day. And then Rossi will be back with me on Wednesday doing an audio-only podcast episode of an intermission episode. We're going to be talking about top 5 comfort movies or TV shows. And so that's what we're going to be doing then. And then, of course, in October, I'm going to be probably getting Anastasia coming in, which is also the sister-in-law of Danny Elfman. So, nice. So I might be getting her on here along with Danny's brother as well. So keep an eye out on that.
And I want to make a correction. I'm sorry. David B. Reed will be here on the 25th. We had to change it up. The 25th. So you'll watch John and I next Wednesday.
Yep.
Yes.
So there you go. So, guys, that's going to be it as far as the show goes. Thank you so much, Jared, for joining us. It was a pleasure interviewing you, getting to know you. You're fantastic at what you do.
Thank you so much. And I'll say just like, keep an eye out for now since Meet People will be available soon.
That was my next question. I'm glad that you. When is it going to be available?
I missed my chance.
I was geeking out so
sharp.
Yeah, right.
I'm firing my head. I'm like, oh no, I missed it. Now they're wrapping up. Okay, bye. I'm like, no, I didn't get the point across.
I'm glad we did that. All right, guys. Well, that's going to be it. Thank you again, and we'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye-bye,
bye, guys.
See ya.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.